What's up, people? This is You're Not Listening, the podcast that teaches you how to actively listen to music one song at a time. I'm Sean O'Loughlin.
I am Sean's dad, Jim.
And today we got another special guest. We are joined by Bob Bland from the Bend and Scoop podcast, which is another amazing podcast about music that we both have been guests on. And we will link to those episodes in the show notes if you want to check out those or just any other episode by Bob. But before we get to our conversation, I want to remind everybody to check out Pantheon Podcasts. We are proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Go to pantheonpodcast.com. If you like this show, I guarantee you will find more shows there that you will enjoy. Remember to subscribe to You're Not Listening wherever you listen to podcasts. We are there so you can get every new episode downloaded directly to your device as soon as it comes out. A couple more things. I got to get through all of it. We have an awesome Teespring store with some really cool merch, including some Lost in the Sauce and Deep in the Cheese t-shirts that you can't miss. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon page. If you think we're worth a couple bucks every month, go ahead, click that link in the show notes too. And lastly, connect with us on social media. We are at YNL Podcasts. And on Facebook, we have an amazing group that we'll link in the show notes as well, where you can discuss with other listeners and discuss with us about some music that you love. So
shout out to Joy.
That's it. That's everything. I think I probably forgot something.
Good job.
You know, we're going off the cuff today. So, Bob, what's up, dude?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. And I'm really glad you promoted the Facebook page because I joined up and not only are you guys having me on, but another podcast saw me mention, I think it was Jim had mentioned something about a specific song that brought back memories. And I mentioned Baker Street. And she wants to have me on to talk about that. So
nice.
Saturday we're going to talk. So it's really been fortuitous to be on that group. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, you see, not only do you get to have cool conversations, it's also a great networking tool. So
yes.
Make sure you're on that. It's the You're Not Listening, a music podcast discussion group. So it's a safe space. There's no judgment. We watch every post. So if you're being you know what we tell you not to be at the end of every episode, you'll get booted or your post will get deleted. So check it out. It's a safe space.
That's all set up by our friend Joy, who stepped up and kind of created that for us too. So thanks so much for Joy. She's going to be on an upcoming podcast episode as well. So she's a lot of fun. She's the best.
We had some recording issues that it's taking me a while to fix it in post, so it's not going to be the best quality sounding episode, but it was a really fun one. So.
And in typical Joy fashion, I said that to her. I said, you know, we're just kind of working on a couple of glitches. She said, oh, no, it's okay. Even if you don't have me on and don't do the episode live stuff, it was just a blast being with you guys. It's like, yeah, nice try.
Yeah, okay.
No. Your episode's going to be out pretty
we'll
soon,
get it
too.
Out
so
there.
She's great. She's the best.
Yep, for sure. So, Bob, before we get into the songs, you brought a really cool song to us tonight. Very, very bluesy.
Yes.
I'm in love with the harmonica sound in it, and we'll talk about all that. But before we do that, tell us about your show. Tell us about Bend and Scoop. I listen to the show. Dad listens to the show.
Yep.
We've both been guests on it, talking about our record collections. Mine was more of like a CD collection, but that's because, you know, that's my generation. But tell us about the show.
Well, the whole purpose behind the show really is to try to expose people to artists they may not have heard before. And it was born out of the fact that so many of my friends are kind of stuck in that classic rock loop in perpetuity. Like anything basically after 2000, they don't even realize exists. Mm. So part of it is motivated by that. And also it's just basically me role-playing DJ. I get to do, you know, things where I'm basically mixing the radio of my teen years, which is, you know, late 70s, early 80s, and jingles and movie clips and stuff from that era with the music that I listen to now, which is, you know, a lot of indie rock and indie music. So, and of course, at the end, the last third of the show, I always have a guest on, usually from another music podcast, and we talk music.
Bob, I got to ask you, have you run into any issues with copyright or anything from your show?
The only thing, now, Spotify booted me immediately, so I'm not on Spotify. That's the one platform I can't be on. The only area I ever run into issues is on YouTube, and that only, it's never really happened. Okay, there's one actual song that I featured that it happened on. And I think it was like a subsidiary of a major, but I try to focus on indie labels. So I think they view it the same way I do, as a promotional vehicle.
Right.
But
as a plus to have because
YouTube, it's a bot. It's the copyright bots, right?
So. And certain labels and certain artists, they'll sniff it out immediately. And the reason I know this is one of the things I used to do was I would put in like an old recording of a concert ad or an album release ad from radio. And one of them was like an AC/DC record from like the 70s. I think it was Power Ridge or something. And that immediately got pinged because there was more than like a 10-second clip of an AC/DC song in the background. So that got hammered. But other than that, it hasn't been much of an issue, fortunately.
I really like, and I think I mentioned this when we were on your show too, I really like all your setup that you do and all the little pieces that you kind of add to that add some authenticity to it. That stuff makes it. And I wanted the same thing, that if you use it too much, is someone going to come and just, you know, kind of snip that right away and say, nope, you can't be using it at all. But I think that's great the way you use it.
It's fun. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you saying that. I had somebody on not too long ago who said it reminded them of like British pirate radio from like the 70s and 80s. And I'm like, I kind of like that thought process. It's like the podcast version of pirate radio, really.
It is kind of like it's more closely related to college radio than like mainstream radio.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Which is nice, because I think when people play the music that they like and they want to share it with people, it feels different when you're listening to it, right?
Yeah.
It's like if you listen to mainstream radio and someone calls in and requests a song that isn't played too often, and then you hear it, it's a little bit different experience, right?
Exactly.
So when it comes from that place, it's hard to explain. I don't know really why it maybe it's just for people like us, it comes off that way.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and one of the ways, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I would try and share music with people would be mix CDs, and now this just, for me, it's kind of the next evolution. This is just really a curated playlist that I've converted into podcast form.
Yeah.
Oh, we know about mixed CDs. Yeah. Sorry about that, Sean.
We have piles and piles of unlabeled CDRs that
called good songs. You know,
yeah,
good songs. 92. You know,
summer hits. 2002. Summer hits.
Yeah, 93.
It's got like LFO August, and Blink-182 on it.
Well, since you're a pirate radio guy, you like right now offshore somewhere in a submarine that, you know, is undisclosed location that we're not going to...
I am in an undisclosed location, but it's not offshore. Very onshore.
We'll give you guys a hint. It's hot where he is.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's probably raining, because it's raining everywhere except California right now.
Right.
So let's talk about some music. I do want to remind everybody, make sure you do go check out his show. I really encourage you guys to check it out, especially listeners for our show, I think, are pretty open to new music and hearing new music and hearing music differently. And so you'll definitely hear some new stuff that you like, you know, if you check out his show. So really, really go check out Bend and Scoop. It's fantastic. All right.
Thanks.
We got two songs tonight. I did not bring a song to the table. Dad brought a song to the table. Bob brought a song to the table. So, Dad, what's your song?
My song is a live version from a show in San Francisco by Van Morrison of Tupelo Honey. The whole deal with this one is that it was done by one of his backup singers, and Van kind of steps aside and lets him take over. And this is one of his iconic songs that, if you know anything about Van Morrison, you're going to know Tupelo Honey. And I even have my vinyl copy, so I can have a visual here that no one's going to ever see, Bob, but I want to make sure I can show you that too when we talk about it. So, Bob, what do you have? What's the song you're going to bring to the table?
So my song is by a band called Treat Her Right, named after the old Roy Head hit. Roy Head, actually from my hometown, or at least the band, he and that band were in my hometown when they recorded that song. So it's unrelated. I didn't even think about that when I was pulling this. But and it's a song called I Think She Likes Me.
Great song.
I'm glad you remember that. I knew this one.
I knew that firsthand because they're from Boston.
Yep.
And they were big on the local, BCN used to play them. They were big on the local stations in the 80s. That song was all over the place. I knew it immediately when Sean mentioned it.
Yep.
And, yeah, it's haunting. It's a great song. It's kind of haunting, the voice. And it's a good song.
Yeah, and of course, you may recognize the singer of this particular track, Mark Sandman, who later went on to front Morphine. And definitely probably much better known for his work with Morphine. They were...
Right.
More widely recognized. But
and a tragic death, something yep. if I remember correctly, too, right?
Yeah, he had a heart attack on stage,
right?
Performing right. with that. Morphine in Italy in 1999, and he was 47, and he died right there on stage. A few months ago, I watched. There's a documentary about him that's on Apple TV Plus, but I guess you might be able to rent it from any streaming service. It's called Cure for Pain, which was the name of Morphine album and song. But he had a really interesting life. He was a bit older than the rest of the guys in the band. And when he left home, he kind of traveled the world and did odd jobs and went around everywhere before he kind of came back and got into music. So it was really interesting. It's definitely worth it. It's not the world's highest budget documentary. You could definitely tell it was kind of done on the cheap, but it was well done. And I enjoyed it.
Nice. Yeah, it's amazing how when you watch those, that it just opens up so many other ideas. Sean and I are always talking about documentaries that we've seen, and you know, one thing begets the next, and then the next one, and the next one, next one. We ended up having Liberty DeVito on the show as a result of Sean watching the Hired Gun documentary, which was great. I knew him from Billy Joel's band as a drummer. Sean knew him from that documentary, and the documentary just kind of opened up the eyes of both of us that way. It was really well done. Yeah,
I heard that, and I had actually seen that documentary too, and that was the big takeaway I had when I watched the documentary was, man, Billy Joel is a jerk.
That's the exact same takeaway I had.
Exactly.
Like, good God, man. Yeah.
What I took away from it was Billy Joel was a jerk, and I would love to hang out with Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie. Yeah. Those are the other two takeaways for me.
Yep. And yet Liberty downplayed that because he didn't kind of get into it. It seems like he's made, you know, the mending of the fence with Billy Joel and stuff. And he kind of didn't go down that dirty story, which was nice.
Yeah.
You know, like he did in the documentary. It was more of the, you know, the questioning and that stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like that's exactly what Sean said too. Like, oh, he's such a dick. I can't believe I like Billy Joel's music so much.
Like we tell you every episode, don't be a dick.
Yeah, stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated. Listen to good music and don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
You'll go far in life.
Yeah,
be surprised how far you can go if you're just a nice person.
Yeah, Liberty love. He loved that too. We sent him a sticker of it, and he posted it. And I think he got 600 shares and all the stuff. People were
thousands
responding
likes,
and stuff. It was good. It was well done. So, all right, Sean, are you good to go?
Yeah. So let's. Okay. Bob, do you want to start with your song? You want to do your song?
Yeah. Let the guest kind of jump in for us.
So. All right. Sure. So go ahead and check out the official You're Not Listening playlist on Spotify, where you unfortunately won't hear Bob's podcast, but you'll hear him on this show. And you can listen to his song. It is Treat Me Right, I Think She Likes Me.
Here alone, she asked me nicely, can I buy you a drink? You know, I think she likes me, that's what I think. I think she likes me, that's what I think.
If you want to watch it on YouTube, you can click the link in our show notes. You can watch it there too. Go ahead. Listen to it, come on back, and we will talk about it. That is so bluesy.
The ending always makes me think of Jim Morrison for some reason. That
part
is like, I think she likes me. It's like just
it's like he didn't want to
Lizard King.
Like he didn't want to slow it down. And he's like, I have to.
The song should not end.
So I love.
And I love near the end where it's like, when he goes, it feels like he's just like hitting it hard and backing up. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, so good. I'm sorry, Sean.
I love the story. And you know, when he gets to the point where he's like, guy with a gun says, why'd you buy her that drink? All I could think of was Come a Little Bit Closer by Jay and the Americans.
there you go.
Yeah, I love that line where he's like, you know, she told me things about her life. She never told me she was someone's wife.
Yeah. This right. is the kind of guy that thinks the bartender likes him when he goes
yes.
to the bar, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And apparently this is based on an incident that actually happened to Mark Sandman. He said it was at a bar in Fairplay, Colorado, which also is the town that South Park is based on, or at least the visual reference for South Park. So it's kind of a weird tie in there, but
oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So, Bob, What is it about this song? You said you took some notes on kind of some things you wanted to highlight. I have a couple things that I want to replay, but you know what is it about this song?
And I have a million stories about this song, so go you start first, Bob.
Yeah, I knew Jim would know it and would have a lot to talk about on this since they are from Boston and this yep. is right in his wheelhouse. From you know they yeah.
as soon as you sent it, Bob, Dad goes, you know, I think he's pandering to us a little bit.
Yeah, as I said, no. I think he's pandering. He's doing a Boston song.
Honestly, not. I got this album back right after it first came out. Actually, they released it locally on some local label in 86, but it wasn't until 88 that RCA picked them up and distributed it nationwide. And that's, I think that was the first time I heard it was, I was fortunate to grow up near Austin and, you know, live music capital of the world. And they had a really good radio station there. It may still be there. It was called KLBJ. And they would, you know, it was the quote unquote, you know, rock station, but they, in that era, they played a lot of, you know, it was almost like a broadcast college radio station in a lot of ways. And I remember hearing this on there. I remember that was the first place I ever heard The Replacements, like Alex Chilton got played on there, you know, so it's, nice. You know, this isn't something that you would normally hear on most, you know, broadcast radio stations back then, commercial radio stations. And I heard it. I said, I've got to get that record. I got it. And then they released two more after that. I got those two as well. They broke up in 91. You know, Mark Sandman went on to form Morphine, and everybody knows and loves Morphine, of course. But this is just kind of the incubated raw version of Morphine to some extent. They do so much with so little. Like Mark plays this instrument that he calls low guitar, which is basically a two-string slide bass. Like he basically
low guitar.
You know, yeah, he kind of really? Frankensteined an instrument out of, you know, a bass guitar, and that's what he was known for. And it's just the sound, you know, they like you mentioned, Sean, up front about the harmonica. You loved how much the harmonica adds to this, and they really use harmonica throughout all their stuff. I remember,
that sound with the harmonica. Yeah, let me just play a little snippet of it so people can kind of get an idea of that sound. I love that muffled.
That's dirty.
When you get the harmonica mic, right? Like that that big fat microphone, and you get the blues harmonica going into it, and you get that really kind of muffled ringing sound out of it. I love that.
In a lot of ways, I kind of feel like this is the precursor to stuff like White Stripes and Black Keys in terms of the minimalist. Like they, you know, they had a very sparse drum kit. They've got a harmonica, one guitarist, and then Sandman with two strings on his bass. But you're getting so much sound out of so little, you know, production and equipment. And they convey a mood and a feeling and a vibe.
I think that's a really, really good comparison. I mean, if you listen to
Black Keys,
like Elephant from White Stripes, that album is just like so full and rich and like the sounds that they get. And it's just him on a guitar and her on drums. And it's like, This is a really good comparison because this is a full sound. It sounds like a big blues band.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I even think of something like Thick Freakness, one of the early Black Keys records, where it's just so loud and full, and it's a guitar and drums, and that's it. White Stripes. And this isn't much more. And you know, the sound isn't as loud, but there's just so much texture, and there's so much going on.
And it was similar. I mean, it might be a blues thing. We, you know, when we spoke with Reverend Peyton, who actually I was going to say, there's one point in this song around 2:43 where there's some slide guitar in the background, and it sounds a lot like Reverend Peyton. We had him on the show, and we talked to him about a couple of his songs, and just an amazing blues guitarist. Their band is him on guitar and vocals, his wife on the washboard, and then one of their buddies on drums, and that's the whole thing. And they get a really full sound out of that too. So you know it. Blues players, man.
They get the most out of what they have.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they really do.
Now, it's funny because I thought when you immediately said this song, besides the pandering thing, I'm thinking like, oh, good job, Bob. He's doing the Boston thing. Nice job. and I meant that with all the positive sincerity.
Yeah, but he could have done Jay Giles. He could have done Aerosmith. Yeah. He could have done Dropkick Murphys.
But these guys were played on the rock stations, the local rock stations, and I think that they were looked at as a rock band in the local Boston scene, not a blues act. So it's interesting you said that. Interesting that you said that they have the harmonica in all the stuff that they do, because I don't know a lot of the other stuff. I knew this song. This one was the one that was played often. But this reminds me of, you know, some of the other bands, like a James Montgomery, who always has a harmonica and everything else. But I immediately thought this is a rock band that has a blues sound rather than a blues band kind of feel.
Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned the Morrison thing about the end of the song. Yeah. There's another song on this record that's if you listen to it and you think of, like, the first couple of Rolling Stones records, back when they were doing blues covers and stuff like that, or This Could Be the Last Time, it sounds like an outtake from that. I mean, it could just come right from that era. I think it's the song I Got a Gun is the one I'm thinking of. So if you guys could check out that record, I think the whole album's on Spotify. I actually was able to reclaim the vinyl here the last couple weeks. It's very hard to find these days, and thank God for Discogs, right?
Well, I got a friend in Texas that's really big about vinyl. I can probably always ask him. This guy named Bob. He's a good man.
Dad, awesome. do you have this record on vinyl?
I do not. No, wow. I do not.
Oh my
I didn't
gosh.
Have this. I didn't have this in my collection on anything. It's a song, one of those songs that I kind of forgot about until you brought it up, Bob. It's like, oh, I remember this, and then
the one
then
that I went got back away.
And then I went back in my own vinyl collection, because again I'm going to pander to Bob. I wanted to have something that was going to be that I only have on vinyl, and I'm finding the Neighborhoods and the Nervous Eaters and all these like indie bands from back in the day that I have their vinyl, and I didn't have this. I thought I might, but I didn't. But I knew and recognized the song immediately, and I remember really loving it when it was out. But
it's
again,
a cool
song. Into the ether, and it's kind of one of those songs that are forgotten until you bring it back like this. This is awesome.
It's a cool song. It's one that I can picture this song like being covered by someone like The Clash, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I could hear that. I could hear Joe Strummer.
Yeah, if you think that part, I think she likes me, the way he says that, like,
yeah.
That was reminiscent of The Clash for me. And they definitely expanded into some other kind of sounds outside of just the Europunk stuff that they were doing. So
yep.
I think that's kind of where my mind went. Obviously, if you listen to the show, that my mind tends to live in the punk rock world a lot of the times. But that's immediately what I thought of whenever he hits that. I don't know if you can even really call it a chorus. It's just kind of like the end of each verse. When he says, I think he likes me, I think she likes me, that's the sound that I was hearing.
Well, I think if you like that song, the rest of the album you really enjoy. And the thing that I think is really great about this record is that's definitely the sound you get throughout the record, but
nice.
Each song is unique. It's not like there's just carbon copies of the previous song. There's definitely distinct sound, and different guys sing on different tracks. Sandman sings on a lot of them, but not all of them. They've got a good mix of vocals as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Are there any moments in the song that you'd like us to share with the audience? Because, they didn't get to listen to the whole song with us.
The one thing that comes to mind is when he gets to the line about waving gun around, and then you hear the sound of kind of the bar fight breaking out in the background. You can hear them kind of jostling around and everybody kind of, screaming, hey, break it up. That.
Yeah, it's
really
like Roadhouse.
That was a good ambient feature.
Like Roadhouse. What do you have a timestamp for that, or you want me to kind of try and find it?
Oh gosh, yeah. I wish I should have pulled up a timestamp, but it's going to be toward like the latter third of the song.
Yeah, let me see if I can.
It's funny because that's it right there.
I want to go a little before that. See if I can get that.
Yeah,
last
you
line.
Nailed it.
Those big drum cymbal hits is like
yes.
It's like glasses and fists,
Yes. I mean, even without that, you really feel like you're there to begin with. It's like it just sounds like a dark, dingy,
like
dirty
bar.
Dive bar.
And if you watch the video, that's what it is. Like they're playing in an environment that feels like that type of place.
I'm glad you mentioned the video. I had never seen that until the other day when I knew we were going to do the show. I was looking around and said, oh, let me watch this. And it's hilarious because not only do they show him jostling on stage, but then he goes off screen, comes back on without his jacket. Then they throw the jacket at him.
Yeah.
So you see this jacket flying.
I saw that. That was hilarious. It's like, and it looks like he didn't, like, that was not planned. It looks like they just did that and he was surprised. Ready for it. It was great.
It was such a great touch.
I will agree. By the end of that, I was thinking Roadhouse a lot. Who's the singer in Roadhouse that we've talked about, Dad? I can never remember. The blind guy.
Jeff Healy.
That, and you know, similar vocal sound to him too.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I was thinking at the end of that. You know, you get
behind
that
the
visual,
chicken wire,
that visual of the crazy dive bar where the band just keeps playing and, even, no matter what's going on.
And it's dirty and it's smoky. Yep. And there's all stuff going on, and the band just kind of keeps going.
Yeah,
going,
this song smells like cigarettes and stale beer.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
There's the sound
neon beer signs, missing letters.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome.
So the whole thing is with these guys, and these you said the Clash, Sean. I was thinking some of the Boston band stuff. There was a band in the same era called the Del Fuegos.
Yeah, I've heard of
that. That had a very, very similar kind of feel to it. And they, I think what happened was there were several bands playing local radio stations on the radio station that had the same feel, smell, taste, smoky feel, you know, mm-hmm. and everything. And they were doing the circuit as well. I actually have seen these guys. I've seen these guys live.
I was going to ask if you ever saw them.
Yeah, and here we go. Are you ready, Bob? Take a ride with me.
Okay.
I think I gave you the information about a friend of mine, Sal Baglio.
Yeah.
And then you had him on your show.
Well, no, I played them. I haven't had him on, but I played one of his songs. Yeah.
You played one of his songs.
Yeah. You should have him on. We'll connect you with him.
Yeah, definitely.
Tremendous, tremendous, tremendous guy. And in fact, he's got some new stuff too that I want you to check out. Check out the band called the Peppermint Mints.
Okay.
Peppermint Mints, M-I-N-T-S.
Sal, that's redundant.
That's his new, that's his new band. And he's got some stuff that really kind of conjures back to the 60s kind of dance, you know, kind of girl group stuff. It's really good. And that's Sal. But Sal Baglio, frontman for the Stompers, I was a fan slash became good friends with slash became very good friends with the band over the years that they were playing. And they were playing like a lot of the area bands, obviously, The Circuit, which is from Providence, New York City somewhat too, but from Providence all the way up to Portland, Maine, and everywhere in between, every dive bar, every big venue, whatever. And we'd go to see them once or twice a week over years and years and years, my wife included, and, you know, all our friends and stuff. And I know that, and I look back and I did some research stuff, and I know one of the bands that opened for the Stompers were these guys. And they had like a 40-minute set. I remember this was their big one that everyone knew, and, you know, the one that was being played on WBCN locally and stuff, and they killed it. Yeah. And there was such a different kind of feel, genre, the old, like, why did you put these two bands together? Because they feel very different.
Stompers have a few songs like that. I mean, songs Sal like Temptation.
They started out their set more with kind of, and they, I remember them saying something like, you know, those guys are great or whatever, and tribute. And they started out with a couple blues songs at the beginning and then went into their traditional stuff too. So talk about full circle.
Yeah.
There's also that kind of piece too, which kind of blew my mind when you picked this song and just started to kind of think about it and do some research. Like, wait a minute, this is all coming together. So, yep.
And that was one thing I noticed even in the YouTube comments of that video where some of the people who were from Boston reminiscing about seeing them like in Cambridge and some of the places. I think they had like a residency maybe in Cambridge or one of these bars back in like 86 where they would play every week and people remembered seeing them. Yeah.
And that was like pretty the Middle common. East or Brighton Music Hall. Well,
yep.
Yeah. Middle or East Jonathan's is in Cambridge,
something
isn't it?
Like this. What's that?
The Middle East in Cambridge?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
R.I.P.
And then, yeah, really. And then it's one of those that a lot of the bands would end up doing that. But, you know, there was a dozen bands that were very well known on the cusp of making it nationally and internationally that you were just kind of waiting. And then, you know, the next level up, there was the Giles, you know, and all those bands would open for Giles. Yep. And then there was Aerosmith, and Aerosmith were dicks, so they didn't do anything. Did I say that a lot? I'm sorry.
So they should have been touring with Billy Joel, I guess.
Yeah, right.
All dick tour.
Yeah.
But not one of those shows would ever be completed. They would all end
no,
early.
No. So, you know, but it was a really rich time for music in the Boston area, which, you know, I'm sure it is now, but, you know, the colleges were hot with music, those shows, those places. And I remember these guys played around a lot, places like the Channel and the Paradise, some of these real big venues that were one step away from superstardom.
I'll say this.
And I do remember seeing them.
A lot of bands that break big and, you know, they come out of like LA, California, Oakland, whatever. And I think people tend to think of like, if you want to break it big, you need to be in New York or you need to be in LA, right? Some of the best local bands are in Boston. And like, still, like I played in a local band in Boston for years, and the indie music scene in Boston is still just awesome. Yep. Like there's so much.
I'll bet it's like Austin still. That this, it's still raw, it's still good and everything else. And it hasn't got, people haven't pushed past it like they have in some of the cities.
And people go to the shows. It's cool. Yeah. Like, people go to Brighton Music Hall regardless of who's playing. Like, they go there because, like, they know that that venue brings in good musicians.
Yeah.
And so people just show up and they're just like, hey, who's playing tonight? And they're like, oh, it's so-and-so. Yeah, they're, you know, they're local. They're from, you know, Medford or whatever. Like, oh, okay, cool. I'll check it out. And like, and then they kill it, and like
yep.
it's a really cool scene. It's very open, and like people are willing to hear music they don't know, which I don't think you get in every city. I mean, the music scene is still good. Well, I don't know about what COVID did to it, but
yeah, no, everybody's hurting, but yeah.
So
and then one other thing that I want to say, and then I'm going to turn it over right out to Bob. This song reminded me of a song that I was actually going to do for this show, but I thought it was too similar, so I scrapped it and did something different. Your song reminded me of a song I hadn't heard for a long time. When we first started show, I remember when I pulled out The Hole of the Moon by the Waterboys, mm-hmm. and I just remember like, oh, this is a great song. I haven't
heard this.
That
was our first Halloween special.
Right. Haven't heard this in a million years, and I love kind of, you know, refinding this song again stuff. Your song, Bob, made me do that again. And one of the songs I was going to kind of pull out that has done that with me as well is a song by The Call called The Walls Come Down.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great song, but almost would be too similar. So I wanted to see if we can kind of mix it up and be something a little different. I don't know if you know that one, Sean, but it's a really good song. It's dark like that a little. It's kind of a little brooding.
Smells like smoke. But smells like cigarettes.
Yeah, it does. And probably the video, all the videos in the 80s were, you know, were so exact to what the lyrics were and stuff. So it's probably the same. But I was going to do that one too.
If I recall correctly, I definitely know the song. It was a pretty big hit, especially on MTV back in the early 80s. Isn't that the one that Garth Hudson played on from the band? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I think
the walls came down.
And I think the lead singer of that band, isn't his son an actor, or maybe one of his brothers? Like,
oh, I don't know.
One of the Terminators or something. Michael Biehn.
Oh, okay.
I think.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, but I remember Garth Hudson specifically. But that's a great record, and that's a good band. They put out a retrospective not too long ago. I grabbed that. It's good stuff.
And you could probably see that it would be a little close to what you did, you know, but I wanted it to be something different. I didn't want to take away from you know, the awesome song that you brought to the table stuff with it being kind of almost too similar. So, yep. So, Sean, I'm sorry. I jumped in on you there and stuff.
No, that's fine. I was going to say, Bob, if you listen to the show, you know that we always ask each other two questions after each song. So what's your favorite part of this song? What's your favorite thing about this song?
I think my favorite thing about the song, oddly enough, as much as we focused on the music, is probably the lyrics. I just think that's what grabbed me initially, was just the story, you know, just hearing it, and just, you know, certain lines just jumped out and grabbed me, and it you get fixated on it throughout the whole song. But I love everything about the song, and just about everything about the band too. I was one of those weirdos that I didn't find out about Morphine until well after the fact, and now I love Morphine too. It's a completely different thing with the sax. That adds a whole other element to that kind of sound. But I love it.
Well, the story is one of those, and not necessarily a story everyone can relate to, but everyone can really picture what's happening. It's like it's told in a way that, like, it basically, like, you're watching a movie, you know?
Exactly. It's like a video in your head. Like, you can visualize it so easily. It's so descriptive.
Can I just ask you one quick question about that? Like, talk to me about Morphine. Because I think I know them. Sean, do I know? Would you have shared Morphine with me?
I probably wouldn't have.
No.
But I would expect you would
have. I'm not so sure I
would
have ever had it for DJing or anything like that. But I know morphine kind of in out here somewhere, yeah. But I can't kind of bring it down. Like, how similar are they? And
well,
obviously, if it's going to be the same vocals.
Yeah, you know, the vocals are very similar, and it's a very similar mood and vibe to their sounds. Okay. But it's also a little more ethereal, maybe. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but there's that kind of almost like a... I don't know what the right term is, but just the saxophone alone really just adds a whole other element. It's almost like they replaced the harmonica with a saxophone, and it's like this really kind of deep, you know, kind of sexy saxophone. But it's Morphine, they're awesome. I mean, at this point, I would almost probably like them more than Treat Her Right, just because I got into them a little bit later. But and Mark Sandman himself, there was a compilation of stuff that he did solo that never got released that they put out called Sandbox that's really good as well. But anything that he has ever been involved with, I always thought was really good. And he just has a really distinctive voice.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, yeah. Oh, it's his voice that really kind of drives it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other question we always ask is, who would you like to hear cover this? Living or dead? Just who would you love to hear do a cover of this song?
Well, you know, I mean, we talked about... Black Keys. I mean, that's probably the first band I can think of that comes to mind that, you know, it would be interesting to see what they do with something like this. But, you know, maybe for something a little more unconventional, maybe somebody like Spoon. I mean, I would love to hear what like Britt Daniels' take on something like this would be, you know, just with the lyrics alone, it would be interesting to see where they'd go with that. But yeah.
Nice. I have to say, one of my favorite parts is the harmonica, without question.
Yeah, I love that.
And when the vocals team up with the harmonica, when he's singing, and I think she likes me, and the harmonica is doing the same at the same time, I think that's like, it almost kind of gave me a little goosebumps of the old, ooh, this is kind of different that they're kind of doing this together. It was nice. So good. So dirty.
And that was the other part of the video that really stands out is the harmonica player is just going to town on that thing.
Really?
He is working it hard. I mean, he is just taking over the whole stage. It was, you know, like, I guess, I don't recall if Magic Dick was that way with Jay Giles, where he would really just kind of go crazy, but this guy was really into it.
I feel like he was pretty stationary when you're comparing it to the the video for this.
Yeah,
that was reminiscent of like Will Ferrell with the cowbell.
Yes, that's a great comparison. You know? It is
really.
You got to watch the video.
Now.
You
got to watch. I have not seen the video, so
it's pretty funny. I feel like it's like unintentionally funny.
Yeah, it is. It is the jacket getting thrown back. Yeah. All that stuff.
Tell me, it's in black and white too.
It's in
right?
blue and black.
In smoky room and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
it looks. Okay. Yeah, they filmed it. It looks like where you would imagine it to take place. Exactly. Neon lit.
Well, now I have to go watch it. I will watch it definitely when we're done here, just because I want to see that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. All right. Any final thoughts about this song, anyone, before we go on to the next one?
I would just recommend again, if you like this song, give that album a listen. And they had a couple others after this that were pretty good, but this really to me was their best album.
What's the name of the album?
It's just self-titled.
Self-titled.
Treat Her Right. Yep.
And Bob, is that 85-ish?
It was, well, they released it locally in 86, but the wide release when RCA put them out was in 88. So it was about two years later.
That's the year I was born.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I had 1 year of college left, man. Way to make a guy feel old.
Sorry.
Yeah. Don't even go down that road because I got you both beat. So.
Sorry.
But they put out two more albums and then they broke up in 91. So there was a short run. But good time.
Awesome. Good band. Boston band. Good job.
All right. Well, Dad, bring us into the next one. This is your song.
Well, it's hard to kind of follow that one because I got goosebumps just thinking about that. And I want to like end this right now so I can go watch that video, but I won't. I'll speak a little for us. So mine is actually not even as deep a dive song-wise, music-wise, vocal-wise, and everything else. It's just a different version of an iconic song that I think is so good that some people have missed, and there are some parts of it that I have to say is a tribute to Van Morrison that he kind of stepped aside and let someone else sing one of his top songs, and I thought that was just something very, very different, very special. So it's Tupelo Honey. which, if you know anything about Van Morrison, you know that song. I think most people do. A lot of people do. Even people born in 1988.
Yes. Well, I was raised by you playing this at weddings, so.
Right, right. Well, the song itself is 71, but this version is from a live show that they did called The Night in San Francisco, and it's actually sung three quarters of it not by Van Morrison. Van Morrison's on the stage and not participating in singing. It's just special. You can take all the tension. Put it in a big brown
bag for me. Sail right around. All right, so go to the official You're Not Listening playlist on Spotify or click the link in the show notes to listen to it on YouTube. Come on back and we'll talk about it. I wanted a stinger at the end of that so bad.
You know, and that's one of the things I was thinking too, that that could have jammed on for another, you know, like 15 bars easily. And he didn't. He ended it appropriately, you know, kind of, you know, right where it should have been. So it was good. What do you think?
Awesome.
Unexpected, yeah, wasn't it?
Good tune.
Yeah.
I really would love to hear that song. And every time I hear the regular version of the song, I think this too. I really want to hear the Crazy Love bass line over it.
Yes. Well, it's the same. They said, you know, it's
the melody.
It's the same kind of thing as Crazy Love and Hymns to the Silence.
Right, but I love that bass line, that do 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 do. And it would just sound so good, even though the bass line in this is pretty awesome. It's super tight and really good, and there's some amazing fills. I marked a timestamp for one bass fill that stood out to me, but yeah, I love that other bass line, and I always want to hear it over this.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that when I did some research too, my computer needs updating. Do you keep hearing that come through? I'm sorry.
No.
Is that it said it has the same kind of texture, same kind of pattern, and almost the same exact song as Crazy Love. Yeah, so very, very similar. So you're probably hearing something that's going to be similar anyway. So what do you think? Different, huh?
Yeah. I always enjoy hearing a live take on an old classic that we've heard a million times. It's a great song, but it's nice to hear it in a different context.
Mm. Yep. I love that. I mean, I'm a huge Van Morrison. I mean, I can listen to him read the phone book, you know, one of those things. I think his just voice is perfect. And I'm always been a huge fan of, I love a lot of his styles of music that he does. This probably is one of my favorite songs that he's done anyway. I've always loved this, but this was a surprise to me. I think, you know, Bob, I think we talked about last time that I used to DJ. That was my, as a guidance counselor / educator, everybody needs that second job. And mine was being a DJ cause I'm not a good painter. Sean will attest to that too, but he hates painting more than I do, but. So I DJed instead, and someone said to me during, you know, a function, you know, when I asked them for a list of music, said, you know, can you have the song played at the reception? I said, I have that. I have, you know, several versions of that. I love that song. He said, no. We want this version from A Night in San Francisco. It's like, oh, I don't know that one. And I went out and found it and fell in love with the entire album, but especially that song ever since then, because it was so different.
Yeah.
So the structure of it, the big thing that kind of hit me is that when you have, I mean, you talk about an iconic song from an iconic artist, like, you know, Jim Morrison, okay? Jim Morrison is going to be on stage with someone else and step aside for three quarters of the song and let someone else sing one of his signature songs. Right? Come on. Never going to happen. Any artist, any you know, big name artist with some of the signature songs being able to kind of do that is probably pretty rare. And yet he stepped aside and let this guy, and his name is Brian Kennedy, take three quarters of the vocals, and he provided that last verse and then did some did some fills, some killer fills near the end when they did the last chorus, which I think is just so unique. And that, you know, not that I'm, you know, oh, Van Morrison, he's the king of everything, and he's wonderful, and all that stuff. I just think it's really unique to hear such a major artist kind of hand that over. I thought at first this was, without knowing the context of it, of hearing it, that someone was covering it, and all of a sudden he showed up on stage unannounced, and that's when the crowd was cheering and everything else. But come to find out that he's on stage the whole time, just stepping back and letting this Brian Kennedy, who was one of his backup singers for years, kind of take center stage and sing this song. And if you think about it, you know, the music at the beginning, you know it's going to be Tupelo Honey because of the buildup and everything. You know, the great guitar licks, and, you know, it's really stripped down and very, very smooth beginning. But then when you hear his vocals at 24 seconds in, it's like, what? Whose voice is this? You know, how much higher it is, and how he's just kind of phrasing it and everything. It was beautiful. You can take all the tension. So first I thought it was a woman, frankly. When I first heard it, and then I realized doing some research afterwards that it just this is his voice. And I guess he's a pretty successful solo artist, writer, performer in Ireland, and he's from Belfast, I think, originally, but and in Europe and stuff, and been on Eurovision and a couple of the TV shows and stuff like that. But he's got a career in that part of the world. But this was something I hadn't heard his voice at all. I think he's just so tremendous. Sounds a lot like a Kenny Loggins to me.
I'm trying to think who.
Yeah, I can hear that.
He reminds me of
Kenny Loggins.
No, it's that guy's name?
You can't think of it now that I just said that either. So sorry.
Is it this? Warren Haynes?
Oh yeah.
No,
I see that.
That's not him. Who am I thinking of?
I don't know, but it almost feels like
Marcus King talked about this. Is who I'm thinking of?
Oh, Marcus King. Yes. Okay. I can see
sounds
that.
Sounds like Marcus King to me.
Yeah. Out of North Carolina. He played locally around here last summer, too. He played in that drive-in
nasty
series.
Nasty guitarist.
In,
nasty blues rock guitarist.
And he was in, was it Ripple that we played that one time when we did it on our show?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in that, too. So it's just, it feels almost church-like at the beginning and with his voice, you know, to me, especially with the organ and all. And I just thought it was such a different feel. So some of the things I wanted to kind of highlight was the fills in between the lines, you know, within the chorus, which are the guitars, both electric and acoustic, and then the organ as well. And then at 1:54, Sean, if you can do that, it's a great acoustic guitar solo, and it's got the guitar and the organ kind of slid in there as well. Right here.
Funny, I also had 202 marked down for the organ. But again, if you listen to the show, you know how much I love me the Hammond B3 organ.
And would you guess that's a Hammond B3?
Yeah. No one's not. Okay. If you hear an organ in a large band, they're playing a B3 through a Leslie. That's just what it is. All right.
It just and that whole section with the during that break is just a build and a build and a build, and it grows and grows and grows to 2:42 is when Van Morrison first steps into the song. Comes in hard, too. They can't stop us on the road to
freedom. It's an awesome drum fill, too.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Ba-ba-ba-ch-ch-ch.
And he hits it. Yeah, and he hits it hard, and the crowd goes crazy like they've been anticipating, which I'm sure they were at a Van Morrison show. Right. For him to kind of join in, and then you know, the collaboration at home when they bring it home and everything else. So, and my last timestamp, I guess, would be at 3:04 and 3:08, Sean. So 3:04 is when Brian Kennedy really hits the she's in an extended note. She's and. And then Van Morrison doing the three times. She's a sweet, she's a sweet, she's just so. And then again, he steps back, lets the other guy take over, and he does background vocals.
You know what? That's my take. The end of that song reminded me of.
No.
With both of Marcus them coming back. What's that song with Jimmy Buffett, and I think it's Kenny Chesney, and at the end, they're basically like fighting for like the last word.
Oh, 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it's
somewhere.
5 o'clock.
Alan Jackson.
Oh, Alan Jackson. Yeah.
Alan Jackson. Oh yeah.
And
they're
just like it's like they just keep talking back and forth.
You've been to Margaritaville.
And,
yes,
and
I've been
like
there.
My
brought
like,
my boat there.
Like one of them has to get the last word in the song, but they won't like that's what it felt like
I always
to me.
That too.
It's like they're trying to outdo each other. Yeah. Right? That's what I was.
Wait a minute.
I almost started laughing.
Like, that's my song. I'm going to outdo you now.
I almost started laughing because it's like they really felt like they were trying to outdo each other, which made me laugh. And it made me think.
See, I looked at it as they just built it to that point, and they just both jumped on the mic, and they both have lead vocals, and they're going to bring it home, is what it comes down to. So. Bob, I've been, kind of talking too much. What's your take on it? Because I know you know this song.
Oh, yeah. I know the song. I love that era of Van Morrison. You know, that album, Moondance, St. Dominic's Preview, all the early 70s stuff he did. The one thing in particular I note about this version and I like is that it's got a quicker tempo and pace. It's
yes.
The original is very slow and very relaxed, and it's got that kind of quiet, almost reverent feel to it. And I think they still maintain that respect of the song, but it's got a little bit more pep to it in this version.
Yep. I think the entire album kind of feels jazz infused, and a little more of all the songs are a little more upbeat like that. So it's probably a theme that ran through the entire show, or what they were doing that particular time. So yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah, I just think he does a really good job on the vocals, because that's one thing with Van and his accent. Sometimes it's hard to pick up some of the specifics of some of the lyrics. Whereas even though this other guy Brian is also from Ireland, he sang it very clearly, so you
could, yeah, it's clean. Yeah.
It's very clean. You could pick up every word.
Yeah, love it. I just think the fact that Van Morrison, and I don't know, he's one of the artists that I love his music so much, but I don't know a lot about the artist, and sometimes that's not always the case, because you do that deep dive into their biography and you know everything about them, and that on March 23rd of their 14th birthday they scratched their nose, all that kind of, I don't know anything about Van Morrison that way, but I don't know if he has a big ego or if he if he's kind of modest that way. But for somebody to step back and not only let someone else cover his own, one of his iconic, I think maybe his most iconic song, but does it well and like steals the show.
He fought for it back.
I think
at the
end. Takes a lot of guts. Yeah, they were fighting at the end, right?
So, Dad, who would you want to hear cover this song?
Van Ross. Let's see. With that, I would like to have a woman's voice, maybe someone with a lot of soul, maybe Jewel.
Janis Joplin.
Janis, maybe, yeah. I just think of Jewel.
Marcus King.
Talk about, talk about documentaries. In the Motown documentary that was about the backing bands and everything else. At the end of it, she does some crazy stuff with some great Motown songs. And I always think that, she's got a lot more soul than I would have expected. I'd like to have her sing it, maybe. So,
you know who I bet would do a really great version of this is Leon Bridges. I would love to hear him do a version of this.
Yep. And it's funny because we've had these conversations in the past, and it's like, I'd like to have Aretha Franklin. And then you do some research after the show. It's like, she's covered it. Like, okay.
Oh, that person actually
so maybe,
wrote this
maybe
song.
He's done it. Yeah. Maybe Leon Bridges has done it. Or maybe we can suggest he does it. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I love his voice. So.
And there's another guy that I don't know if you guys are familiar with. Have you ever heard of Anderson East before?
No.
He's got that blue-eyed soul thing going, but he's got it's kind of got a little bit of dirty, kind of not gravel, but just it's not as syrupy as some of the guys that have that have that genre. So yeah, he would be a good candidate for that also.
This
yeah.
is another yeah. thing that I love about, if you listen to Bob's show, you'll pick this up. And Dad always knocks me for the way that I describe music. Bob is also
visual.
Has some very creative ways that he describes music. Yep. And that was an example. Syrupy is that's a great word to describe vocals. And
it's gonna be the next t-shirt. Well, how about Hall & Oates? Maybe.
Eh.
Yeah, Daryl Hall could pull something like that.
Yeah, Daryl Hall. Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. I was just thinking, like you and you mentioned it when you said that, that white soul kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
Sean, what do you think? I know you're from Sean, Bob, as you probably have heard, or I don't know if you know this or not, but I come from the point of view where a lot of times I'm into the lyrics, the vocals, and I found music through either the history of listening to it since I was 400 years old, since I was two, or DJing. Sean hears it as a musician. And yes. I, as a DJ, I pushed buttons and with a psychology background kind of manipulated people to get out there and dance. So we come from two very different perspectives. But Sean is a true musician. You know, when I don't know if you saw his eyes light up when you said that Mr. Sugarman had a two-string bass that he played. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, that's him. That's what Sean. So what's your impression of this from a musician's point of view, Sean?
Sounds like a Van Morrison song.
Yeah, nice. You just shot me right down with that.
No, song. I mean.
That was a softball, too.
Here's the thing. I don't want to say all his songs sound the same, but I will say that nobody sounds like that, right? Like, they're able to get a very specific sound in their songs, and that sounds like a Van Morrison song.
Even with Brian Kennedy?
I'm not talking about vocals. I'm talking about the music.
Music, okay.
The music, and the music
very
is...
very well arranged.
Music. Here's the thing about blues music. Blues music is the easiest thing to play, and it's the hardest thing to play, right? If you play guitar, you can learn the minor pentatonic scale, and you can play over any blues track and feel like you're, you know, like Buddy Guy. But
B.B. King.
But if you really want to play blues and, like, do a really good job at it and actually, like, you know, kill it, it's wicked, wicked hard to get it right. So, like, it's very clear that that band is full of extremely talented musicians because everything is so, so tight. And everyone knows exactly when to hit their fills and exactly when to back off, which is almost more important than playing your part right. If you know when to back off, that makes all the difference. And so, like, it's very impressive, but, like, it's a Van Morrison song. They're all impressive.
It's what he does.
They're all like that.
Not a lot of improvising and riffing going on.
No, but, you know, there's some complicated parts, but, like, they're going to play the same way every time.
Yeah, except when you have a different vocal. That's what brings a different color, I think, to the whole song.
I liked the vocals. It was a nice break because Van Morrison's voice is...
Yep, is Van Morrison's voice.
And it, yeah, I don't know. It's not, you know, like you said, it's the same melody as, like, three other songs that he has. So.
Right. It doesn't waver a lot. He doesn't, you know, have a lot of different styles. He's been doing the same kind of thing for years and years and years. But I think that's a surprise when, okay, you hear the opening lines and it seems pretty smooth and, you know, a little more maybe cut back, you know, and you know, maybe softer. It's definitely going to be Tupelo Honey, Here We Go and stuff. But then when you hear that voice kick in, to me, that's a shocker of the old. Didn't expect this at all. And then, okay... So the second verse, okay, so Van's probably going to take that. You know, in a typical way when you hear live music, that the guest will take the first verse. The artist himself is going to jump into the second one, then do the third together. Well, no, he didn't show up for the second one either. Like, what's going on here? I think it was such a nice surprise. And a different, I like this version, and I love Tupelo Honey. I love that song. I always have loved the song, 71, you know, and I remember it when it was out. I like this better than the original version 100 times over because of the vocals. Favorite part? 242 when Van Morrison comes in. When it's that drum beat, boom. You can't stop it. You know, it's just magical. Goosebumps for me. So.
All right.
Wait, Bob, what about you?
No, I'm with you on that, Jim. That part of the song is really where, because for one thing, you're not sure if he's even going to join in. It's like, he's let this guy covering it for him. And then he just pops on. And the crowd shows good restraint. You don't have the anticipatory cheering. It's like he starts singing and then you get the cheer. Yeah.
Oh, he's stepping up to the mic. Let's down him out while he's singing, right?
Yeah.
No, it was a nice surprise in a time when you don't get surprised as much with a classic song. You know, it was a nice surprise to hear that stuff, which is why I thought it was important for people to hear, because if they think they know every version of Tupelo Honey, they're not listening. See what I did there?
I see what you did there. That was good.
Right? Ah.
Yeah, see?
That was
That's good. A great name for a podcast.
Yeah. Nah, hey, that's a
good idea.
Yeah.
Bend and scoot.
That sounds like a podcast that takes too much time off between episodes.
They're busy because they have busy
All right, lives. Any last-minute thoughts about that song?
Nope, just thanks for letting me bring that one to the table. That was fun. That was fun.
Yeah. All right, Bob, anything else that you want to say? You have the platform. You're on Spotify this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's nice to be on Spotify.
That's where the majority of our listeners listen to us is on Spotify, actually.
Well, I will plug the fact that even though my podcast is not on Spotify, I do have a playlist with all of the songs from all of the episodes, and it gets added to after each episode this Friday. And that's when our new episodes post every Friday morning. We're going to be up to episode 61, I believe, is this week. It's either 60 or 61. And there's like literally over 24 hours of music on that playlist now.
Awesome. Well, make sure you send us the link to that so we can put it in the show notes. People can check that out.
Yes, definitely will do.
And it's Bend and Scoop.
Yes, Bend and Scoop.
Okay. Why?
It is a reference. Okay, it's a reference to the first Cheech and Chong movie, Up in Smoke, which there's not any sort of a drug connection, certainly, I assure you. But it's just a movie that I thought was funny, and there's a Battle of the Band scene in there. But in the beginning scene, and there's some clips in the open to my podcast that are from that and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where Strother Martin, who's playing Chong's dad in the movie, is just yelling at him about being a bum and all this stuff. And he's trying to get him to go. He's got a buddy that works for United Fruit. Why don't you go get a job, you know, picking strawberries? You just bend and scoop, you know? And so that always struck me as being, okay, that could be a dance move. That could be, you know, any number of things. It's just, and nobody else had used it, obviously, because it's a ridiculous name for a podcast.
I was surprised that no one had used our name, if I'm being serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Yours for sure. I'm glad you didn't have it taken.
And you do yours 100% alone, right? Except, I mean, you invite a guest in, but you do all the setup and everything else alone.
Yeah, I invite the guest, but
it's a lot of work.
Editing is the bane of my existence. Ah, oh, God, I hate editing. But it's the finished product is fun. That's really where you do it for, is to get the finished product. But my buddies, I'm on a couple other podcasts, and one of the ones, the first one I was ever on, I'm still on with some buddies, they always give me a hard time about spending too much time focusing on Bend and Scoop and not not doing the How Many, which is the one I'm on with them. So it's one of those hobbies that just takes up so much time, and I bit off more than I can chew, but it's fun.
Yep, that sounds about right. Awesome. Yep. Well, again, listeners, make sure, or non-listeners, which is what we call our listeners, make sure you check out Bend and Scoop. Go listen to Bob's show. It's awesome. You're going to love it, and you're going to find some awesome new music from it, so make sure you check that out. Remember to subscribe to this show wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a rating and review so we can actually, like, you know, get in the algorithm a little bit. If you leave a written review, that kind of helps us get exposed to more people, brings more people into the community. And if you want to join that community, make sure you also join the Facebook group, the discussion group. You can do some great networking, maybe get on some podcasts and talk to us about some awesome music that you love. Share a song that you love that people might not know, and we can talk about it. Check out all of the stuffs in our show notes, including Teespring store, Patreon page, social media, all that stuff. But especially the one that you want to check out is pantheonpodcast.com, because it is chock full of amazing music podcasts. Like I said in the beginning, if you like this show, guarantee you'll find something that you like there. That's all we have for today. Thank you again, Bob, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Remember to stay hydrated, listen to good music, and don't be a dick. We will talk to you next time.
See you, folks.